Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, have you recovered yet? I woke up this morning. I was sad.
Man, what a roller coaster of emotions that was. And I just finished my like rewatch of the game, not just hitting play, but like, you know, chopping up every play. And yeah. It was just like LeBron, he got us to overtime. Uh-huh. And then, you know, it's easy to remember the missed free throws, but there was like a really bad corner three. And then there was a bad turnover where he tried to pass it to Jonathan Williams mm-hmm. when he wasn't open. And yeah, it was just like a bad stretch for a couple minutes and he was just so good in the second half and throughout most of overtime. Yeah, it was just like, yeah, it was just a roller coaster game, man. It was frustrating.
The pass that got to Patty Mills that went right by LeBron, the inside out pass, like that's the one that kind of sticks out to me, because if he has his left hand in any kind of ready position, if he is not just standing straight up, not only does the ball not get to Patty Mills, but he probably has the ball going down the other way in a one-on-one against Patty Mills up four.
Right. And that's there was another one too where Jonathan Williams switched on to Rudy Gay. I think it was mm-hmm. not Rudy Gay. It was one of the guards. It might have been Mills. And LeBron and Lonzo did this too, in fairness, although it didn't go to Lonzo. Williams did a great job of staying in front of him, but LeBron totally collapsed down into the paint and left Rudy Gay open at the top of the key for a three that I think cut it to two or three. So yeah, it was just an awful stretch those last couple minutes after they had me like so hooked. And like even on press row, man, everybody was like leaning into each shot and just like, wow, like it was as animated as I've seen press row. And I was sitting where a lot of the scouts are, and they're like the crustiest, like least amusable people. Like they're even harder to make smile than I am after a loss. So, and even they were like, ooh, ah, ee, you know, so yeah.
What are the chances I get you to say something that makes you laugh after that game?
I'm better the next morning. We're recording, you know, the day after.
No, so. I meant like at, like if you and I would have recorded right after that game.
Ooh.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. It was hard for me to come up with something. Like, I can't lie. I was just like, oh, man. All right.
It was rough. Yeah.
Yeah. The one that I went to was on that play with Josh Hart, where he is kind of like walking the baseline. He throws the ball up ahead. Lonzo tips it to LeBron. I legit thought for like a half a second that Lonzo was sitting at the scorer's table and then just like wandered on and like fooled everybody. Because I don't remember him being a part of the play. And then he was all of a sudden a part of the play. That was what I, it was a weak one. It was not, there wasn't much that I could point to.
We'd be on cloud nine right now if they won that game, because there were so many, like, it's such a great comeback and so many fun. Like that play right there where I was like, you know, Josh is trapped. He's like got his heels over the sideline.
Yeah.
Just kind of throws it ahead. Lonzo comes flying in. It was almost like Derek Jeter on that one famous play against Oakland, right? Where the throw's offline and he comes running in and gets
LeBron
it to the catcher, right?
M1.
Yeah. And it, like there were so many, and then Kuz just killing it, lighting it up, you know, and, but alas, 0-3.
Well, all right, so we weren't going to start here necessarily, but the big talk this morning has been like, what's wrong with the Lakers? Why aren't we? And like in my mentions, it's been a lot of like, why aren't you freaking out? And like you're less of an NFL fan at this point than I am, and than you've been in general. But it reminds me of the NFL, where like in week three, every team just about has cases that they can make why they could be 2-1 or 3-0 or whatever, right? And you know, the way I kind of put it, now I think this is a sarcastic way to put it, and this is leaning way too far over to one side, but like the Lakers are Nick Stauskas breakout game, a fight breaking out, and LeBron missing two free throws away from being 3-0 against a really tough opening stretch, right? And I think that's what we have to kind of keep in mind here, is that like there is no reason to freak out. There are reasons to be concerned, but there's no reason to take a broad-sided view of everything and say, yep, this is done for.
Yeah, this Lakers team is going to be a good team. I feel very comfortable about that and confident about that after the first three games. Mm-hmm. LeBron has not been particularly great. He's been good in stretches, but he's very much sitting back. I have a like friend of a friend, you know, who
entertainment source.
No. he's figuring stuff out. You know what I mean? LeBron is figuring out, you know, his supporting cast. He's figuring out Luke. He's sitting back, and it's not like there's a lot of, I've seen on Twitter a lot of, he's looking old. He's looking like he's lost a step.
No,
when he decided to turn it up in the second half, he was incredible.
Yeah.
And for most of that second half, you know, so I'm not so much concerned about that, but by the same token, when you have LeBron James on your team, are there really moral victories?
No, of course not.
You know, like they're 0-3 and they need to freaking win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that I think all of this can be true, though, right? Like,
yes,
no,
yes.
There are not moral victories. I'm not looking at those as moral victories. I'm saying that it's not. I can't get it. I can't find myself to get to a point where I'm freaking. Harrison was in the silver screen Slack this morning, like asking for hard hot takes about the Lakers being 0-3 right now, and like if I'm sitting like, no man, there's no hot take to make. There is literally no hot take to make here.
Sure.
All right. So what we were going to talk about? Well, we were going to talk about KCP. We were going to talk about Kyle Kuzma and Jonathan Williams. Those were the three main subjects. We'll see if we can get to all of them. We will take a quick second, and when we come back, I want to talk about KCP. That one to me is the most interesting of the three things to kind of come out of last night, so hang tight for a second. Today's show is brought to you in part by Blue Chew. Were you feeling a little bit down from the game? That kind of can hurt your confidence in some ways, I guess. If that's the case, head on over to bluechew.com. That's blue like the color blue, and it'll bring you, bluechew.com will bring you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach, and since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever the opportunity arises, even if that might be after a tough loss in overtime to the San Antonio Spurs. Blue Chew is prescribed online and ships straight to your door in a discreet package, so no in-person doctor's visits, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a visit BlueChew.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON, and get your first shipment free. That's right, free. Just pay $5 shipping and handling. That's BlueChew.com. Use the promo code LOCKEDON and get your first shipment absolutely free. BlueChew is the faster, cheaper, better choice, and we so I thought, look, the we'll talk about Kuzma here in a second, and how one game obviously isn't enough to change anybody's mind about whether or not Ingram should be in the starting lineup or Kuzma or whatever. We'll talk about Jonathan Williams and his impact on the game, and how that highlights a lot of what you and I have been talking about the Lakers' dire need for a second traditional like backup center. But to me. The Josh Hart and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope dynamic here is the most interesting to me because it's the most obviously political. It's so apparent, and it has been very apparent dating back to preseason that Josh Hart is the better player right now than Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, and it's not close. Now, Hart played twice as many minutes as KCP did last night. And I don't think that it'll be that ratio moving forward for forever. And I still don't think that that's something in the heat of the moment, like that kind of thing can happen. But moving forward in Luke Walton's planning of the games, I don't know that I can trust Luke or the Lakers organization to go with Hart in the way that he very obviously needs to be gone with because of the whole clutch dynamic.
Yeah, I have similar concerns. That being said, KCP has been so bad.
He's like been terrible.
Like what? There's a loyalty that's going to come with that, right? LeBron's desire to win is going to supersede that every time. If KCP can't get the job done, all this means is he's got a longer leash than he would otherwise. But it is not going to be something where KCP is going to start forever at the detriment of the team. He is not as bad of a player as he's showing right now.
Yeah.
But I would argue that even regular KCP
is not as good as we've seen from
Josh Hart.
Yeah.
And Josh is a really good, like, so there's like forgive me, I'm kind of making this up on the fly. So, but there's kind of like a chain reaction to the Lakers, like when they get to their ideal spot. And we saw in some of those Jonathan Williams minutes where it's like good pick and roll contain, nice contest with the length that they have, leads to an outlet pass to LeBron or to Lonzo Ball, right? Great passer, which gets to a secondary pass to LeBron James, great passer, which gets to a stampeding Josh Hart or a corner three shooting Kyle Kuzma, right? Like that's the step A, B, C, D, right? In the ideal world of how the Lakers are going to work.
Yeah, if you were to design a possession, that's what it would look like.
Exactly. And both Josh and Kuzma really fit into that. KCP can hit those pull-up threes too, but he can't, like, Josh gets all the way to the rack and puts just a ton of pressure on the rim. And, like, his ability to do that, especially, I don't expect it to happen this year, but if Josh can start, like, driving and kicking on some of those to Kuzma in the corner, right? Yeah. Like, Kuzma hit, I think, four corner threes yesterday. And
I'm not sure if any of them hit the rim either.
Yeah. And just like all of it really fits together well with Josh in a way that it's just that putting pressure on the rim element is just not an element of KCP's game. And Josh can hit those pull-up threes too.
Yeah, it'd be one thing if it was close. And that's what you and I talked about at the beginning of the season, is that like the guys, the incumbent starters are going to be given longer leashes than the guys who are going to be trying to take their minutes because of the trust factor, because of the veteran stuff, because the front office acquired those guys. Like, that was always going to be a factor here. But as we talked about before, if one of those younger guys was to supplant one of those veteran guys, it was going to be it would have to be crystal clear that they are better than the guy that they're replacing. And in this case, like, anybody watching that game, if I was just to point out, hey, that's Josh Hart, that's KCP, who's better at basketball? Like,
yeah,
my 2-year-old niece could have figured that out.
I mean, in whatever role, they're going to need KCP to figure it out to reach anything close to their potential. Absolutely. This season. He was a high 30s shooter last year from 3-point range who's got some defensive value. So this is it reminds me of the stretch that he did when he was in, in jail.
Legal issues.
Yeah, legal issues. That's what we're supposed to say, right? and it reminds me of that stretch where he's got like, the problem with KCP when he's bad is that he's got no feel and self-awareness for his badness, like, as much as anything else. And I don't want him to, like, pass up open shots or anything, but he is seemingly unaware of, like, I don't know, man, some of the, like, early shot clock mid-range jumpers and off of, I don't know, they're just not good plays, and he's like oblivious to his suckitude right now. And it's frustrating along with fit things and all of that. So when it comes to down to that with Josh versus KCP, I mean, Luke sees it too, right? How long did KCP stay on the bench?
He played for a long time.
He played that dust. Right. It was a 53-minute game in which he played 19 minutes. That said, and what's funny and the irony in all of this, I think he led the team with like a +8, right? So usually over the courses of a season, plus minus is going to be more indicative than it is in individual games. But like, the Lakers got off to such a slow start in that game. They badly outplayed San Antonio for the majority of that game.
Yeah.
But they were so severely outplayed early on, and that listlessness really set the tone for that, both defensively and on the offensive end, that it was a hole they pulled themselves out of, and they should have won that game. They blew it at the end, but you just don't want to get off to those types of starts. And that's been something that, you know, that's going to be something that's problematic if KCP is playing like this.
One of the theories on KCP shooting, because last year was kind of an outlier year. It was the best he's ever shot from 3-point range over the course of his career. I think it was Darius who there was just kind of, there were people wondering, it was the same kind of prognostication about who can shoot on the Lakers roster, and a lot of Laker fans were saying, just look at what KCP did last year, and then there were people in Detroit who were saying, yeah, but when the pressure's on, that's not necessarily how he shoots, and it's a completely intangible and unprovable point to make here, but I you start to wonder if that doubt starts to creep in, if he doesn't start pressing, like you talked about, the lack of self-awareness of his suckitude, which I love as a phrase. Like, I wonder if that's an after effect of this guy just, he's pressing in ways that, whether it's because of minutes, because he isn't making shots, whatever it is, he's pressing when he really should be letting the game come to him.
Very much so. That said, I don't know. Like, he's invisible for such great stretches that it's like he's either doing too much or completely invisible. It's actually kind of impressive he's able to do those things simultaneously. Like, there are possessions where I'm like, what are you doing? And then most of the time I'm like, where are you?
Yeah.
And so,
yeah, you never find yourself asking where Josh Hart is.
Right. Yeah. You know, Josh Hart's in the game. You know, he's doing, and like, Josh isn't perfect, right? His perimeter defense has been bad this year, and it's continued to be a concern. He's good in the post, but he's been beaten at the point of attack a lot, but he's not like providing next to nothing while he's out there. And there's just like, there's an energy to the team when Josh is on the court.
Yeah.
I don't know if that bears out in the numbers and the net rating and all of that yet, but I think over the course of the season, it will.
I think so, too. All right, we're going to take a quick second here, and when we come back, we're going to talk about Kyle Kuzma, and if we can get to him. Today's show is also brought to you in part by Mizuma. Mizuma USA has been absolutely phenomenal in helping me focus solely on this podcast, which is my passion. I am a small business owner. This has turned into a small business for me. And as it has become that, it's been great to be able to focus on that. And I can trust that Mizuma has all of my CPA, my bookkeeping, any kind of tax consulting that I might need. They have all of that covered in one easy to access spot. I have a great team that I work with. Carly has been incredible. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you a number, and you're going to get a free consultation with no strings. Call 213-947-6926 for that free consultation. Again, that's 213-947-6926. Let them know that Anthony from Locked On Lakers sent you. Again, 213-947-6926. You'll get a free consultation. You'll figure out what package might be best for you. Packages start at only $75 a month, and it's for peace of mind. And frankly, there is no amount I wouldn't pay for peace of mind, especially in this regard. So again, that's 213-947-6926. Mizuma, your small business's one-stop shop for bookkeeping, taxes. So like I've said a couple times over last night, in all of the podcasting that I've done since the game, and then as I alluded to early on before we went live, it's not that I think that Ingram should lose his starting spot now. I want to make it absolutely clear that that is not where I'm standing right now. I'm merely asking the question, what would we have to see? Like, what is the bar that we would need to see from Kyle Kuzma for that conversation to start?
I think you could play both of them together. I think it's something that, where they could both start.
Especially if KCP keeps struggling the way he has.
You
slide Kuzma into the two, and then you give Josh Hart what would be KCP's minutes as the guy coming off the bench.
Remember when we did the show with Harrison as well, and you asked me like what my craziest take was, and that's what it was.
Yeah.
Kuzma at the two, right? And LeBron, so if it were me, and I may get myself into trouble with listeners on this, but if it were me, the starting lineup would be Lonzo, Hart, Kuzma, LeBron, and JaVale. Mm-hmm. And Ingram would play a lot of minutes. Mm-hmm. I think Ingram will play his best. I think he should get all of the minutes where LeBron isn't on the court. Now, you can do that with him still starting, right, and staggering rotations and whatnot. But I think we saw in that Houston game, and it's not a matter of efficiency, it's a matter of volume, that he went nearly two full quarters without getting a shot up. Mm-hmm. You're never going to have to worry about that with Kuzma. If you've got Kuzma, Hart, and Lonzo next to LeBron, you've got three willing and able shooters, which is something that LeBron has always thrived off of. And we saw in the last game how that offensively was very beneficial.
Luke playing Sfee told me that he's looking for willing shooters to put out there next to LeBron.
Right.
That just screamed that to me when he put him in.
And the other guy in JaVale is a vertical lob threat, right? Mm-hmm. Like, these are the types of guys that have been successful around him. Now, I think we probably put too much emphasis on the importance of an individual player starting and not enough emphasis on the importance of the capability of a starting lineup. Mm-hmm. That group of five plays together three or four times more minutes than your other lineups do usually over the course of the season. And it's important that group of five gels well together. Does that mean those are your best five players? No. Ingram is one of the best five players on this team. There's no doubt about that. Yep. But does he fit well alongside, like I said, those corner threes, he's been struggling with those. Yeah. He has difficulty getting them up. And when he does, he's not able to finish those. Now, you lose something on the defensive end for sure. Mm-hmm. And even with having Harden in the lineup, I would like to see that given a shot first, because I think that Ingram's main value is as a wing defender, which is something that it matters in today's league, but what the Lakers are doing with switching and when they're picking roll coverage,
it's not.
What if they're getting killed by great guards, and then against San Antonio they got beat up down low, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know how much Ingram's going to change either of those things.
That's a really good point. That was kind of what I came to last night in the podcast. Is the trade-off here, if you're sliding Ingram out and you're putting Kuzma in, you're going to get a lot better offensively in terms of flow and in terms of roles and stuff. And the trade-off is going to be the defensive stuff. And look, San Antonio came out shooting bonkers. So I don't even think Ingram could have really affected that given how they were shooting the ball. Right. But you know, I think the Lakers very obviously missed some of his length out there. Like, Rudy Gay was getting to any spot that he wanted, and he was getting very clean looks whenever he tried to release a shot.
He needs to be a 30-minute per game guy at least.
Yeah.
That, I'm not arguing otherwise.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of how do the first five
those minutes come with? Like, that's always been my focus here with the Lakers, is the combinations that seem to make sense. And to me, I feel like LeBron and Kuzma seems to make a little bit more sense than Ingram and LeBron. And that's not to say anything about Ingram the player. It's just about what skill sets fit the guy better. And you know, we'll see how that plays out over the course of the season. Maybe Ingram's shot comes around, but as of right now, you know, if we see over the course of the next day, Ingram's out three more games, and if we see Kuzma continue to be able to space the floor that way, I do think it's worth having a conversation, not definitively saying that Ingram's got to go or anybody not named KCP has got to go. It's just to say, look, let's just keep an eye on this for a little while.
Is it a worthy investment to keep rolling with Ingram? Let's say it plays out that way, right? Mm-hmm. Where they look good over these next three games and they get a couple wins. They look good on both ends of the court as much as they, or at least better than before. Is there value in, hey, Ingram needs to learn how to play this way and play alongside LeBron? Because it's one thing to get him get him as many minutes as possible without LeBron on the court, but like, that's a problem if they can't be really good together long term.
Yeah.
Is there value in a short investment in that in the near term to find out, like they need to play a lot of minutes together probably until January at the very least before we start making conclusions on that, even though I suspect it's going to be a difficult fit up until that point? You probably got to invest in that, right?
Yeah, I think it's worth finding out, so long as it very obviously doesn't hurt your team's win-loss record. Because again, that freaking matters. Like,
I don't think you get to get both. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And what I'm saying is that if if their rating is a pairing, if you go on NBA.com and you isolate times that those guys are on the court and you're seeing a net rating of like 30 in the wrong direction, then all right, that experiment hasn't worked out, and you have the makings of a KCP and Brandon Ingram and whatever for Anthony Davis trade. I didn't say that. Don't.
I'm not associated with this.
but yeah, I mean, the Lakers are unfortunately right now in a hole in a tough Western Conference. These wins are going to have to start coming here pretty soon. And if LeBron and Ingram's minutes have to be staggered to get those wins, then I kind of say so be it. And that experiment that might cost the Lakers a few more wins over the course of that experiment, like I'm not sure if it's worth it.
Yeah, and they've got to. I mean, they're going to play together either way, mm-hmm. right? Like, it's not like they're going to completely avoid each other. So maybe that's the happy medium, right? Is get Ingram all of the minutes when LeBron isn't on the court, and that doesn't mean that's all of Ingram's minutes, yeah. but kind of maximize those times where he can operate without having to do that alongside LeBron.
Absolutely. All right, let's really quickly talk about Jonathan Williams. And again, what I took away from it, and kudos to Williams for playing the way that he did. I was skeptical about him being able to do that. I'm still skeptical if he's going to be able to do that on a regular basis. He is still an undrafted rookie, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not going to go so far as to say that, you know, here is the answer. But what I am going to take from that is this is exactly what we've been talking about when it comes to the center rotation is the Lakers just need a guy who can do those things. And if they just had that guy, whether it's Jonathan Williams, whether it might be Tarik Black, whether it's a trade for Robin Lopez at some point, whatever it might be, hoping that Kosta Kufis or Tyson Chandler hit the buyout market, whatever it is, like that needs that position needs to be resolved. And it's very clearly not Ivica Zubac. I feel confident in saying that. And I'm leaning towards it probably not being Michael Beasley either. Maybe it's Williams, but they do need, like, that addition to the roster needs to be made on an everyday basis.
Yeah, it's something, and it's the things that Williams does, right? Like, he can switch onto guys. He can contain on the pick and roll. He sets good screens. He's a, you know, how we were saying, I was saying the other day, like, grimy dudes. They need grimy dudes.
Yeah.
He's a grimy dude. And I even brought him up and said, well, he's probably not an NBA player at this point, but screw it.
Yeah.
Like, neither is
can he throw an elbow?
Zubac? Yeah. I don't think Zoo is an NBA player
at
this point.
Should we point one out? That noise that you're hearing, the noise that you're hearing in the background is Harrison breaking his office to pieces.
Yeah, and there are a lot of people, man, that are really rooting for Zoo. But like, and that's been a conversation I've had like with people around the team and whatnot is like, there's just like a Zoo. Like, I wanted it so badly for him, you know, but there's starting to be that like resignation of this is what he is, and he's not an NBA guy. So if Williams can bring that to the table, I mean, he's undersized, he can't shoot, but he wouldn't be a great fit on every NBA team, but I think he provides, like, this is the best NBA team he could fit on.
Or like the Warriors.
You know? Sure, right. Yeah, the Warriors are another good example of that. So I hope that they can convert him from that two-way. You know, we'll see who comes available later in the buyout market. But the buyout market is in March, man. Yeah. We need help way before that.
Absolutely. I completely agree. And that's where, like, right now, the hope is that Williams is a stopgap option. But this kind of gets back to something that I've been a little reticent to criticize because they have done, you know, they landed LeBron James. But Rob Pelinka and Magic Johnson deserve a little bit of criticism for this center rotation. Like, it that needs to be spoken about a little bit. And for somebody like Luke Walton, like, Walton is getting a bunch of crap for, you know, rotations and this and that and the other. But this isn't a perfect roster. It's a very obviously flawed roster that if a two-way guy can step in and fill a need that very obviously was there as this team was put together, like, somebody should take a little bit of flack for that.
100%. And this was something that all of this, how they did it, all of this made sense if LeBron was going to play big minutes at the five.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not. And that's where that house of cards completely falls apart. Now, in the playoffs, and this is something where Magic has said this team is built for the playoffs, I would be shocked if LeBron does not play the five mm-hmm. spot, because he can be extraordinary. He could be the best small ball five in the world. Mm-hmm. But they got to get there, and they got to get through 82 games. And a guy like Williams, maybe one of those guys that can get you 12 minutes per game and won't be in the playoff rotation, but can get you through a season enough to where you can have something competent and capable out there.
Yeah, he's kind of like, for baseball people out there, and we're recording this hours before the Lakers kick or the Dodgers kick off their World Series here, is he's kind of like that middle reliever who every playoff team needs, that you know, he can just give you 70 innings or so and help you, just kind of, if one of your starters doesn't have it. Like last night, for example, JaVale McGee gets into foul trouble. At one point, he took that fall, and my entire life flashed before my eyes. but in those kind of situations, that's where Williams can kind of step up. I completely agree. I'm thinking it makes more sense to me, because the Lakers seem to want to have their 15th spot open. So it wouldn't surprise me if Zubats gets waived as a move to maintain that open roster spot, and Williams' two-way contract at the end of the 35 or 45 days, whatever it is, gets converted to an actual NBA contract. That's how I'd prefer to see this play out.
I think that's the case. I have heard from people who know a lot more about the salary cap machinations than I do that Zoo may have some trade value mm-hmm. Over the course of this offseason. Like he's got an option, or basically something that makes him valuable even around draft day mm-hmm. to have that extra bit of salary. So I, without accounting for that, because I don't know the details of that well enough to speak on them, I'm right there with you. I think you know, you waive Zoo, and then you add Jonathan as that spot on a minimum deal, and then keep that spot open.
Yep. And they have time, you know. It's 35 game days, right, essentially, right? Or 45 game days that they have that many days to decide on this. Or I don't know how I might be speaking out of turn here. We might need Pincus. Or, do you know how that – it's the two-way contract – is how they monitor, how they list the days of service with the NBA team.
So travel days don't count, mm-hmm. but aside from that, you know, yeah, it counts toward those 45 days. So that's something that, like, Williams cannot play with the Lakers the entire season under its current, you know, he's got 45 days with the big squad, and that's once South Bay starts up. And I think the official day for that is Saturday. Mm-hmm. I'm not entirely sure on that, but yeah, he's got to, like, if they want to depend on him throughout the year, they've got to convert him to a full year.
Yep, absolutely. All right, that'll do it then for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. We will be back again after the game Wednesday night, tomorrow night. Hopefully, if the Lakers lose to Phoenix, that's where you'll start to see some of the hot takes pop out from me. That's a game that they should win.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, have a great rest of your day. Pete, thanks for hopping on. And we will talk to you guys tomorrow.